Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Canto 3, Chapter 26 is Fundamental Principles of Material Nature. This is Sankhya philosophy. Spoken by Lord Kapila Dev to Devahuti. And the Mahatattva has begun manifesting the different elements. And we're at the stage of the manifestation of Ahankar with its three different features according to the modes of nature. We're going to be reading texts 25 and 26. And just for sake of context, I'll read, go back a little bit. The process of creation is what's being described, because with creation there's the sarga portion and there's the visarga portion. So normally we think of creation to be the visarga creation portion, what Brahma does. He creates the universe. But there's a whole other creation that takes place before that. And that's what Lord Vishnu does. And that's what's being discussed. And it's creation. And then it's maintenance and dissolution. And resting, and then again creation. Like that, it's cyclical over and over again. And it's quite subtle, but it's not only the big cycle of the universal creation, that's one span of time. There's other bigger spans of time and smaller spans of time. And in those smaller spans of time, the same principle is active. Or principles. We'll hear. Objects come into being, we'll hear from this morning's verse, as a result of the contemplations in the mind influenced by false ego. In other words, we have places. When I was visiting in Shanghai, one of the devotees was just, his British person, you know, very a business person was there and started a business or something like that, quite successful. He was giving the history. Once upon a time, you know, between Chinese and the British, there was something, and so Shanghai used to be a fishing village not so long ago. And to avoid a war, someone said, you know, you just take this area over here, and they developed it. And now the population of Shanghai is ridiculous. Without the detail. But once it was a fishing village. Not so long ago. So what it has become, all the physical objects have come about through false ego, or springing from the combination of passion and the influence of false ego and ignorance. False ego and passion, false ego and ignorance, the false ego. So, little circles, small circles, big circles, that the same principles. So, as we're studying, or in your readings, when you read Sankhya philosophy and the process of creation, it's not just once upon a time Lord Vishnu did this and Lord Brahma did that. Those events do take place in a systematic way, a chronological way, but it's constantly going on. The transformations of matter due to subtle influences. And false ego is a bearer of those subtle influences. So here's text. Uh, 21. We're going to be discussing 25, so these early ones will go quickly. The description is manifestations of or in the Mahatattva. The mode of goodness, which is clear, sober, which is the clear, sober status of understanding the personality of Godhead, and which is generally called Vasudeva, or consciousness, becomes manifest in the Mahatattva. Within the Pradhan, everything is there but dormant. The modes are there but they're dormant. Karma is there but it's dormant. The elements are there but they're dormant. They're undifferentiated. So the potential or the potency is there, but dormant. And then the potency or the potential becomes activated by the injection of living entities and time. So the modes which were dormant now become activated. Mode of goodness. In the purport, Prabhupada discusses this Vasudeva state, just like the father of Krishna, Vasudeva, became the father of Vasudeva. So the state of goodness invites Krishna to come. And if one wants to return to Krishna, then one worships Krishna. Vasudeva Sarvamiti. It elevates one to the quality of goodness. You realize Krishna and you go to Krishna. And Prabhupada writes here, relevant, in order to get released from the false ego, one has to worship Sankarsana. Sankarsana is also worshipped through Lord Shiva. The snakes which cover the body of Lord Shiva are representations of Sankarsana, but not regular ones. And Lord Shiva is always absorbed in meditation upon Sankarsana. One who is acne worshipper of Lord Shiva as a devotee of Sankarsana can be released from false material ego. And then, so there's Vasudeva Sankarsana, then Pradyumna, first he does Aniruddha, and if one wants to become free from mental disturbances, one has to worship Aniruddha. For this purpose, the worship of the moon planet is also recommended. in the Vedic literature. You become peaceful and free from mental disturbances. But not the, it's through the moon worshipping Aniruddha, it's not just worshipping the moon. Similarly, to be fixed in one's intelligence, one has to worship Pradyumna, who is reached through the worship of Brahma. These matters are explained in Vedic literature. So that the elements of creation, they have their deities, and through the worship of the deities of those elements, one comes to the purified state. Text 22. After the manifestation of the Mahatattva, these features appeared simultaneously. As water in its natural state before coming in contact with earth is clear, sweet, and unruffled, so the characteristic traits of pure consciousness are complete serenity, clarity, and freedom from distraction. And then that Vasudeva state, original state of consciousness of living entity, becomes influenced by the modes of nature. Text 23-24. The material ego springs up from the Mahatattva. The modes become activated, and then false ego becomes separated out. The false ego springs up from the Mahatattva, which evolved from the Lord's own energy. The material ego is endowed primarily with active powers of three kinds, good, passion, or ignorance. It is from these three types of material ego that the mind, senses of perception, the organs of action, and the gross elements evolve. False ego influenced by different modes produced or differentiate out from the Mahatattva different elements. So text 25. The threefold ahankar, the source of the gross elements, the senses and the mind, is identical with them. The threefold ahankar, the source of the gross elements, senses and mind, is identical with them because it is their cause. In that sense, they're none different. Cause and effect have some connection. There's some difference. One is cause, the other is the effect. But there's a connection. And the oneness aspect of ahankar is none different. That is to say, within the products of ahankara, ahankar is present as its cause. So Shanghai is there because of the false ego of the people who created it, and so forth. The artwork of an artist carries the consciousness of the artist. So that sentence again, the threefold ahankara, the source of the gross elements, the senses, and the mind, is identical with them because it is their cause. It is known by the name of Sankarsana, who is directly Lord Ananta with 1,000 heads. The threefold Hankara is the term, and the pronoun it refers to the threefold Hankara is known by the name Sankarsana. So we heard in the previous little purport in order to get release from false ego, one has to worship Sankarsana. So he's the lord of false ego. He, therefore, as the cause is present in the effect, he is false ego in that sense, that as the effect has the presence of the cause within it. And to get release from false ego, one must worship Sankarsana. And that's the worshipable deity of Lord Shiva. He meditates on Lord Sankarsana. Here's another reference to that. I'm going to be reading a little section from chapter 12 of this canto, the appearance of the four Kumaras. Brahma requests the four Kumaras to assist him to create Praja. They say, no thanks, Dad, we want to stay Brahmachari. And so he becomes angry, hearing this, you know, denial of his request. And then in that state, although he tried to curb his anger, it came out from between his eyebrows, and a child mixed blue and red was immediately generated. The child began to cry, "Oh, destiny maker, teacher of the universe, kindly designate my name and place." Brahma replies, "Don't cry, I'll do as you request. O chief of the demigods, you shall be called by the name Rudra by all people because you have so anxiously cried. My dear boy, I've already selected the following places for your residence. Where does Rudra or anger reside? The heart, the senses, the air of life, the sky, the air, the fire, water, the earth, the sun, the moon, and austerity." Got a lot of places to reside. And in that purport, so this is 3.12.11, the creation of Rudra, this is the purport, Prabhupada. The creation of Rudra from between the eyebrows of Brahma as a result of his anger, generated from the mode of passion, partly touched by ignorance, is very significant. In Bhagavad Gita 3.37, the principle of Rudra is described. Krodha, anger, is the product of kama, lust, which is the result of the mode of passion, the other verse. When lust and hankering are unsatisfied, the element of krodha appears, which is the formidable enemy of the conditioned soul. The most sinful and inimical passion is represented as ahankar, or a false egocentric attitude of thinking oneself to be all in all. Two more sentences. Such an egocentric attitude on the part of the conditioned soul who is completely under the control of material nature is described in Bhagavad Gita as foolish. And the last sentence. The egocentric attitude is a manifestation of the Rudra principle in the heart, wherein krodha or anger is generated. And it goes on. So these terms, Rudra, Shiva, Shambhu, so forth, they're different features of the same, you say, entity. And Rudra specifically is the anger principle. But a manifestation of Lord Shiva that springs from false ego and one who is influenced by false ego will exhibit those symptoms of anger and so forth. And the presiding deity is Sankarshan, who is directly Lord Ananta with 1,000 heads. Then the next, you recognize the Sanskrit right away. Kartritvam Karanatvam Cha Kartavyam Cheti Lakshana. The Lakshana, the characteristics of false ego are these three. Kartritvam, Karanatvam, Karyatvam. Like, you know, the Bhagavad Gita version is the same thing, it's just simpler. The Kartritvam, the Karmani, Lokasya Srijate Prabhu. Krishna's saying to Arjuna, don't ever think of yourself as the cause of action, the cause of the result of action or inducing others to act. All this is being carried out by the modes of nature. Well, the modes of nature act upon false ego, and when the modes of nature act upon false ego in a certain way, one thinks oneself to be the doer. It's the influence of false ego. Misidentification with matter, because matter, Prakriti, is the Kartritvam, the cause of action for the materialist. The mode of passion, whatever the modes of nature are, they induce people to act the way that they act. The false ego is characterized as the doer, as an instrument, and as an effect. Read the purport, three things. Doer, instrument, and effect. Now, let's you know, in the example of making a clay pot, there's the clay, there's the wheel, and there's the potter. So the potter, in one sense, in one way of looking at things, he's the creator of the pot. And the pot is in the elements, the clay, and then the potter's wheel moves, and then he can make the clay pot. So the instruments are used to make, upon the clay, to make a pot, and there's the person. So false ego, point here is, its influence is very strong. It's in all three dimensions. The doer, the instrument, and the effect. Then according to the modes of nature, it's characterized as either serene, active, or dull. Very strong. It's the most subtle, but at the same time, very, very strong element. Here's Prabhupada's purport. Ahankar, or false ego, is transformed into the demigods, the controlling directors of material affairs. And because of my study of Brahma Samhita, I can share with you there are prototype demigods, and then there's the demigods of each universe. Prototype demigods are the same as the prototype of Brahma, or they're that's just Bhaktisiddhanta's language, but it makes it very clear. When the glance of Mahavishnu goes towards Pradhan, living entities in time are carried by the glance, and they agitate Pradhan, and the elements of the Mahatattva start to differentiate secondarily or in sequence. the seeds of the universes within the pores of his skin. Upon his exhalation, they leave his body, they enter into the Mahatattva, and the elements cling and enlarge the universes. Because the universes are just seeds. They're spiritual and subtle seeds. But when in contact with Mahatattva, the elements cling to them and enlarge the universes. But along with those elements that are clinging to the seeds of the universes, there's controllers of the elements, the demigods that are being spoken of here. And at the end of chapter 5 of Canto 3, the demigods who are the controllers of the elements, they pray to Mahavishnu, help. It's not happening yet. We're not cooperating together yet. We don't have the capacity, the potency, the direction, the intelligence, the means to do what you want, so please assist. So he assists. Beginning of chapter 6. He assists by expanding himself. Mahavishnu expands as Shirodakshay Vishnu. Within every particle of matter. And with him comes, again, time. Only time is known by a specific name. In this case, it's Kali, or the power to combine. So he gives, Shirodakshay Vishnu gives both the intelligence and the ability to combine. So the demigods, the primordial ones, can then get the universe shell together. When you read Brihat Bhagavatamrita, as Gopakumar passes through the layers of the universe, there's the layers, there's a presiding deity of a Vishnu Tattva form in each layer, and there's a controller, there's a demigod. That's where these demigods reside, and that's what's being spoken of here. Prabhupada writes in the purport, Ahankar, our false ego, is transformed into the demigods, or the controlling directors of material affairs. Because we don't have a universe yet. So it's not the demigods within the universe. It's another category. As an instrument, so now it's going to the next. So the doer is the manifesting the demigods who do the doing. And then as an instrument, the false ego is represented as different senses and sense organs. They're the instrument, like, you know, the hand is an instrument. And all each of the senses, they're instruments of some action or some knowledge acquiring. That they're instruments of action or knowledge acquiring. They're instruments of fulfillment of a desire. What happens when you become desireless, or your desire becomes one with Krishna? You no longer require a material body. As long as there's a desire separate from Krishna, through the agency of false ego, the presiding deities are created. The senses themselves are created as instruments. And as a result of the combination of the demigods and the senses, material objects are produced. Shanghai, or wherever, someplace. It's the cause and effect. So, when understanding the cause and effect, then one can know how the living entity becomes covered, one can then know how to become uncovered. In the material world, we are producing so many things. And this is called advancement of civilization. But factually, the advancement of civilization is a manifestation of false ego. By false ego, all material things are produced as objects of enjoyment. So false ego is present as the presiding deity, as the cause of all causes is present in all things. The cause is present in the effect. Like those examples, you know, the architecture is the manifestation of the architect. The artwork is the manifestation of the artist. The effect has the presence of the cause. There's difference. But on that sameness principle, then the doer, the demigods, the instruments, the senses themselves, and the objects all arise from the cause, false ego, according to the modes of nature. That's what's being said. By false ego, all material things are produced as objects of enjoyment. One has to cease increasing artificial necessities in the form of material objects. It's called renunciation, or at least decreasing, nivritti. The purpose of decreasing, that's not in and of itself everything, but it helps. It helps the illumination of self-knowledge become brighter rather than duller. Do it the other way, it becomes duller. So, but renunciation isn't at all the essence. It's something that may help wet wood become dry so it can ignite. What we want is igniting. We want Krishna consciousness. So renunciation, by gradually reducing things, not artificially, but by decreasing them in a natural way, by spiritual strength, it makes Krishna consciousness more accessible or more brilliant. One great acharya, Narottama Das Thakur, has lamented that when one deviates from pure consciousness of Vasudeva, Krishna consciousness, he becomes entangled in material activities. The exact words he uses are Satsanga Chari Kainu Asteli Mas Nakarna Lagyanye Karma Vanda Pas. Oh, I'd like to refer to that. Quote, I have given up the pure status of consciousness because I wanted to enjoy in the temporary material manifestation. Therefore, I have been entangled in the network of actions and reactions. Karma Bandha Pass. So exactly as Narottam Das Thakur's song describes, he himself, this is the bigger picture of living entities coming in contact with Pradhan. And in their original state, the example that's given is of rain before it hits the earth. It's pure. It's distilled water. But when it hits the earth, it becomes muddy. But its nature is not muddy, its nature is pure. Simply consciousness of living entities, is nature is pure. You come in contact with Mahatattva or Pradhan, then it starts to differentiate into elements, false ego, according to the different modes, and you get all stuff. You get the controlling demigods, you get the instruments, you get the objects. And you get entanglement in material activities. And once entangled in material activities, it's really hard to get out. Krishna says that in Bhagavad Gita, and our experience tells us. So rather than, in a general sense, rather than increasing involvement in the material energy, pravritti, as a path of religion, ours is nivritti, decreasing involvement in material affairs, material activities, and the ones that we do with material energy, it's for the purpose of serving Krishna and not otherwise. And thus we're protected from the deluding influence of that illusory energy, and it helps ignite our Krishna consciousness. And these are fundamental principles of material nature, how material nature acts to condition, and how knowing those same principles, how material nature can be acted upon in such a way it gives liberation by Krishna consciousness. So, look at your notes. I'm going to go use the restroom for just a moment. Pretty complex, huh? You're tired on top of it all. Any discussion? Well, the start of your question is, what does undifferentiated mean? Okay, differentiated, undifferentiated. But undifferentiated is the pradhan state. I'll just offer my understanding of what it means. There's probably like many other ways to say the same thing. I'll give a verbal description, then a visual example. So, undifferentiated means everything is there, but not distinct. It becomes indistinct when dissolution takes place. Dissolution takes place when Vishnu pulls the plug. He withdraws his time energy. And the living entities. But he, by withdrawing the time energy, time activates. Karma. So karma doesn't end at dissolution. Karma just becomes inactive, dormant. So when the living entities are then withdrawn within the body of Mahavishnu, their karma is dormant because there's no time energy allowing it to be activated and, you know, unfold step by step. Your karma is happening in your life because of the time energy. So the time energy is withdrawn, and when the time energy is withdrawn and the living entities, that's the activating factor. The elements collapse unto themselves, the gross unto the more subtle, unto the more subtle, unto the more subtle, unto the more subtle, unto the pradhan state. That's what the undifferentiated is. Everything is there, but not distinct. and then differentiate it is with the activating factor of time in the living entity. And time, by the way, according to Brahma Samhita and our scriptures, there's sub-parts to the time energy. Specifically, Jnana, Bala, and Kriya, also known by other names, but there's potencies within time energy, the force of activity and instrumentality in Bhaktisiddhanta's language in Brahma Samhita. But it's, without the detail, it's an activating or animating and energizing potency that makes the undifferentiated differentiate. And differentiated means the elements are there, but something else is needed because the elements are there, but they're not in a cooperative state. In the language of Brahma Samhita, is the conglomerating factor of the non-conglomerated elements is absent, and then the Lord makes the conglomerating factor present, so they can conglomerate, not just. They can not just cling, but they can do their work. They can, you know, the cause and effect can take place because then they know what to do when they're in a cooperative state. It's not just elements, it's intelligence that comes from the Supersoul situated within every atom of matter and within the heart of every living entity, which makes complete sense. You need him to be in both places, otherwise you're not going to have a creation. So that's the difference. Now, are there personalities? Yes. There's you know, starts with specifically the personalities of the demigods as the doers. They're the ones that are permitting, at least. Not a blade of grass moves without the sanction of the Supreme Lord. And the sanction of the Supreme Lord comes through his controlling deity representatives. There's presiding deities over all things, because all things have their presiding deity. So there's personality as well as potency. There's the control of the potency and there's the potency. And you just go back one step, which is what this and the previous verse are saying. Those, the controlling deities, the senses, and the objects of the senses, have behind them their cause, which is false ego. And false ego, it's primordial, sometimes manifest or differentiated, sometimes not manifest or undifferentiated. But property, a subset of which is false ego, is eternal, sometimes manifest, sometimes not. So all of what creation is just a state of manifest transformations of those manifest states, dissolution, rest, then again manifest. So it's different, just transformed states. Shakti Parinamavad is the description of Vyasadeva's teachings. So these shaktis or potencies are constantly being in a state of transformation by the sanction of the Supreme Lord, but his sanction has like lots of subparts. And these are some of the subparts. So the last part of your question was, like, for example, do each of them have a personality? But yes. Rudra is a personality, quite a character. Brahma, and so forth. So the back to that purport that I read from text 21, Brahma is the representative of intelligence. And the Lord of intelligence is Pradyumna. So one may worship Brahma as the representative of Pradyumna, thereby worshipping Pradyumna, ultimately actually worshipping Pradyumna through by respecting or worshipping Lord Brahma. And one can, by that method, develop pure intelligence or restore pure intelligence and the mind and so forth. So it's not only there's personalities, but there's deities of. That answer your question? How do you realize? By Krishna consciousness. The understanding of the Bhagavatam is not by getting a PhD in Sankhya philosophy. You can have a PhD in Sankhya philosophy and still not understand this. But it's understood through devotion, and part of devotion is hearing. The purpose, it's in one sense, it stimulates the intellect to try to grasp the message. But as you're expressing, kind of indirectly, is okay. But my intelligence isn't grasping the message in its fullness. It's not that you're unfamiliar with technical things, you're familiar with technical things. So how did you become familiar with those technical things? You studied and studied and studied and studied and studied and studied, and that which when you began studying was all new, now you understand. That other people that are the students still, or just beginning students, they don't understand yet. So you're teaching them what they don't understand yet. But this is a different kind of subject matter. It's not just you study it and then you understand it. It's devotion. You study it with devotion again and again, and by descending methodology, not ascending, but descending methodology, what's the most important thing is what's the role of the Supreme Lord in all of this? Throughout, from before it begins, as it's just beginning, it's then a little further along and a little further along, and now the Supreme Lord is essential, not optional. And when one's consciousness comes to that position and takes shelter, then these things can be understood. In the case of devotional service, there is certainly a creation, but it's through the agency of the internal potency. And thus, in other words, the living entity doesn't become deluded. So the experience of that is proportionate to the consciousness of Krishna. The consciousness was going to be different, and so the experience is going to be different, and the project is going to be different. Like the example from Bhagavad Gita, there may be two factory workers working side by side, and one's in Krishna consciousness and the other's in Maya. So they may have a factory worker devotee. It's not, it can be taken figuratively or literally. So somebody's putting up a building, someone is building a temple. They look the same. I mean, activity-wise. But consciousness-wise, it's very different. And experientially, it's very different. And the realization of so many things is different. The happiness and distress are different. Anything? Yes? Something? We just worship Krishna. We don't worship Brahma. I'll read the description again. Similarly, to be fixed in one's intelligence, one has to worship Pradyumna, comma, who is reached through the worship of Brahma. Now, we approach Brahma through disciplic succession. We're not ignoring Brahma or get out of the way. We're doing this way. And then the lord of the intelligence of Brahma is Pradyumna. But the Chatravyuha have their supreme lord, Krishna. So we just worship Krishna on the order of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So it go the other way. There may be persons who they especially appreciate Lord Brahma, and they see him as the worshipper of Pradyumna, and they honor him and worship him and respect him in that way. Were that to be the case, the same outcome. But for the most part, persons that may worship or offer respect to Brahma or Lord Shiva, etc., they don't see him as Vaishnavana Mita Shambhu. They don't see him as direct. Commonly, they don't see him in that way. Now, there's Sampradaya, in which he's the head of, and at least those who are clear in their consciousness, not affected by the modes of nature, they'll understand Lord Shiva is the representative of the Supreme Lord and respect him in that way. Does that take care of your question? Okay. Srila Prabhupada, please.